Peter Harrison. The province has decided to hold off on introducing its new Human Rights Act. Attorney General Tom McGinnis admits the holdup is over the clause that includes rights for lesbians and gays. And that fact is not lost on the group Lesbian and Gay Rights Nova Scotia. The group has taken out a full-page ad in today's Herald. Maureen Shabib is a spokesperson for the group. She joins us on the phone. Maureen, at the bottom of the ad, there is a phone number to call to express your opinions over the inclusion of gays and lesbians in the Human Rights Act. That phone number gets you to the Premier's office.
Yes.
Any idea what the response has been to the ad? How many people are calling?
Well, I don't honestly know at the moment. I haven't checked with the Premier's office to find out if his line is busy or how many calls he's getting, but I think we're all fairly optimistic that there are going to be quite a number of calls made into his office.
You don't think that the Premier's keeping tabs for you and he's going to give you a running tally of
I don't expect.
This sort of thing, it hasn't come cheaply. Full-page ads in the Herald or any other paper. Any idea how much this whole thing cost you?
Well, it's been in the thousands.
Where does that sort of money come from?
Well, the two organizations that are on the bottom of the pages having sponsored it, the one that I represent, Lesbian and Gay Rights Nova Scotia, and the Gay and Lesbian Association of Nova Scotia, have both paid for this ad. The money comes primarily from the gay and lesbian community. The money is there.
The Human Rights Act, do you believe that with the announcement by the government at the end of the week, that it's going to be, they're going to hold off on it for a while. Do you think that it may be dead in the water, that the government may keep putting it off until the whole thing blows over, the controversy?
Well, if you mean if they'll ever introduce the legislation with sexual orientation in it, no, I don't think they will. I think they realize that they can't do that. That if they introduce the legislation without sexual orientation in it, that is going to cause such an uproar that they're just not going to play it that way. I think that they'd prefer to hold the legislation back altogether.
I know. I'm asking you to speculate here, and I know that you don't have access to government meetings to find out exactly what the holdup is, but why do you suppose that they're not going ahead and doing that then, if it's just a matter of time? Why is the government holding off on this?
Well, I really don't know, other than to speculate, and in that sense to say that we, as we've said recently in the media, we think that the Premier himself has a problem with inclusion of sexual orientation in the Human Rights Act. I don't know why, but it seems fairly apparent that if a majority of people within his caucus are willing to support the legislation and another segment are saying that they wouldn't stand in the way of such legislation, then we think it must be the Premier who's stopping the legislation. Why? If I don't know. If he thinks it's not politically expedient to do so at this time, that may well be his reason, but I think he's quite wrong.
And offer an observation here, and I want you to comment on it, if you will. A few years ago, gays and lesbians didn't have an organization to rally around. We didn't hear much when issues that had to do with gays came up. The groups were noticeable by their silence. This has been a rallying point for gays and lesbians in Nova Scotia, and we're seeing more of a regrouping of the troops than we have in the past. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's true. My experience over the past couple of years working with this lobby is that more and more people, more and more gay and lesbian people, are coming forward and saying that they don't want to have to live in the closet anymore. They don't want to have to live their lives without the kinds of protections that other people enjoy in the Human Rights Act. People are realizing that it's incredibly important to work toward this. It's an issue around dignity. It's an issue, it goes beyond simply the rights that would be protected in the Human Rights Act. It's more than that. I think it has been and continues to be a rallying point for gays and lesbians in this community, and I look forward to that growing immensely in the coming months. As we intensify our lobby.
Where do you take your battle to have inclusion in the Human Rights Act? Where do you take it from here?
Well, we're going to keep taking it to the Tory caucus and to the Conservative government. We don't consider the matter over by any stretch of the imagination. And in fairness to the Attorney General, I think he indicated that the matter is not dead from his perspective, whatever the perspective of the Premier's is or whoever else in caucus. We're going to intensify our lobby. We're going to come back bigger and better and stronger in the coming months. We will, take take a little bit of time to analyze and review where we've been and where we're going. We've heard from all sort of quarters of the community that we operate in that we have run a very effective lobby, and we're going to continue to run an effective lobby. We're going to broaden the base of support that we have, get more people involved, do more of the kinds of things that we've done today. I mean, I think in some ways you've just seen the thin edge of the wedge on this.
Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Maureen Chabib speaks for the group Lesbian and Gay Rights Nova Scotia. I'm Peter Harrison.
The crazy horse.
That it is the case that some people believe that, and there are seminars of this taking place in this province. What can people in your community do to counter it?
Well, once again, I guess what we'll do in our community is increase our efforts to educate the public. I think that the public, generally speaking, are open-minded, fair-minded, logical, rational people. I think when faced with some facts about homosexuality and the lives of gay and lesbian people, I have a basic belief in that most Nova Scotians will not support the notion of saving gay and lesbian people from their sexuality, but will support the inclusion of sexual orientation in the Human Rights Act, ultimately, in the legislation in this province. That's what I'm reaffirmed in believing that, and I believe it just reinforces the task ahead of the gay and lesbian community to continue working in that area.
Yes, and you'd obviously like to have that support from churches in as much as from any other quarter, isn't it?
Absolutely. Churches should be taking the lead in this area. And so,
Ms. Chabib, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maureen Chabib is a member of Lesbian and Gay Rights Nova Scotia. It's 8 minutes before six, and this is CBC's Main Street.
Tolliver later identified them as Felix Rodriguez and Rafael Quintero. These two Cuban exiles were in charge of the Contra supply operations at the military base in El Salvador. Both were employed by the CIA. Tolliver said whenever he talked with Felix Rodriguez and Rafael Quintero, there were strong hints that the plane should carry a load of drugs to Florida on its return flight.
The innuendos were always, well, look, it's a shame to bring the airplane back empty. Why don't we arrange, or you arrange, for some extraneous cargo? And I said, well, that's not my end of business, but if you guys want to do it, you know, once again, I don't care what we take going down or what we take coming back. It's all the same to me. The airplane's got to come back. So they were thrilled about that. And we had to arrive at a figure of what I would charge to bring back different aspects of merchandise. So,
you discussed specifically bringing back dope?
Yeah.
And you discussed what would be your rate for bringing back different kinds of dope?
Well, we didn't get into different rates right then. We just got into what would be for a package for the airplane. What would I charge? And I told him I'd charge $125,000 to come back and $75,000 to go down.
You know. So armed is cheaper than dope.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's safer. You know, dope people, armed people, you just don't shoot you. Dope people shoot you.
Miami International Airport. Michael Tolliver was brought here by members of the Contra Network in March 1986. He was given an envelope with $5,000 in it and an identification card with his picture over the logo of a phony company called Pacific Air. Tolliver and his co-pilot, whom he knew only as Carlos, were taken to an elegant silver and red DC-6 aircraft, which was waiting on the tarmac.
I did my pre-flight check. We crawl in, and I said, well, are you going to load the merchandise? And I said, no, it's already loaded, ready to go. I said, no problem. We leave the Miami terminal control area.
No, nothing.
Not yet, still, now, or ever have been. We're about halfway down, probably a 5.5 hour trip, maybe 6 hours at the most. And during that time, I go back a couple of times and look at the boxes, which are unmarked. You know, there are some small boxes, some big boxes, some cardboard boxes, some corrugated boxes. You know, and I peek in corrugated boxes and I see hats and uniforms, camouflage gear. Some of the wooden boxes are nailed down, but I'm freaking out. I see little barrels, and I said, okay. So this is what I figured all along. It's armed.
Tolliver and Carlos arrived safely in Honduras. They flew into the main Contra military base with their plane load of weapons. It took several dozen Contras about an hour to unload the plane. The way Tolliver tells it, he and Carlos were then told to go to the capital city, Tegucigalpa, and wait for instructions. After a few days, they were ready to leave Honduras.
We go back, the airplane's already loaded. I mean, it's full, ready to go. We're at 28,000 pounds of pot. We're coming. None. No idea. That's not, once again, that's not my end of it. I suspect that it was Colombian pot.
But were the same people, Carlos and the other people who...
Once again, I was out of pocket, as was the whole crew, for 3 days. I don't know what happened to Carlos. So it's conceivable that the airplane could have left there, gone down, picked up, and come back. That's conceivable. It's conceivable that another airplane could have brought it in, unloaded it, used the transshipment port. I have no idea. That, I didn't ask. That's not one of my functions. So we came back, took off, I suspect, around maybe 7, 6:30 at night, something like that.
Mike Tolliver was nervous as his small plane, loaded with marijuana, approached.